Welcome to Sourcing Enterprise AI, a podcast by Upper Edge, a leading IT sourcing, negotiation, and project execution advisory firm. I'm John Belden, Chief Strategy and Research Officer.
And I'm Kylie Chisholm, Upper Edge's Content Marketing Manager. Join us every other week as we explore the impact of artificial intelligence and the critical issues IT decision makers and sourcing professionals will face.
The AI market is just in its infancy with new capabilities, new vendors, and a new competitive landscape and a boatload of risk. In each episode, we'll do a deep dive into a particular AI topic and explore the latest news releases and their potential impact on the market.
Empower your AI decision-making with vendor insights and fact-based sourcing strategies. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. Hey, John, how's it going?
It's going great today, Kylie. Going great today.
Awesome. That's what we like to hear. I feel like every episode we start out with me saying I'm really excited to dive into today's topic. but I think we're just this. It's such a unique time in the market when it comes to AI that you and I every week are like, there's a brand new thing that we can have a whole episode on and talk about. So this week we are talking a little bit about OpenAI and the New York Times recent lawsuit. The New York Times sued OpenAI and Microsoft. So we are going to dive into that deeper. But obviously you're the expert here. So could you give us some quick background on OpenAI and the New York Times relationship and sort of the circumstances that led to this lawsuit?
Yeah, I think this is a really good topic to kick off the year with, Kylie. I know we were at our just at Upper Edge's kickoff this year, right? Yes. One of the things I spoke about was a little bit about AI. And, you know, the question came up, you know, what do you see in the future? And I think my response was, legislation, litigation, and acceleration, right? Well, this fits right into that first category of litigation in terms of AI and part of what I think we're going to see in the future. So, you know, this lawsuit, I think, came out somewhere around mid-December in terms of the New York Times suing OpenAI. And I think in order to be able to get an understanding of the lawsuit, we first have to understand I'm not going to say OpenAI, but let's talk about the New York Times, because they're the ones that are obviously the plaintiff here and feel like they've been wronged by OpenAI. So let's get a little bit of understanding of the New York Times. They were founded in 1851, and they would say, hey, they've got a long history of providing what they would consider to be the highest quality journalism in the marketplace, right? I mean, people respect the New York Times. They've got really high quality writers. They've got doctors that are writing about medicine. They've got, you know, I'll call it lawyers writing about law. And if there's a reference point for, you know, the truth, the New York Times would claim to be that entity of the truth. They've got around 10 million subscribers today. Primarily, I'll call it in the that are pay subscribers that go behind the paywall. So they're online subscribers, not largely paper subscribers anymore. I don't think there's that many people that actually get the New York Times in paper format. They produce probably around 250 articles a day. Right. So they are producing the most, I'll call it, relevant content. And, you know, the New York Times would describe themselves as journalism that's worth paying for, right? Mm-hmm. So in other words, what we produce, you know, people are willing to pay money for that. And in the New York Times business model today, you know, they sell not only the subscriptions, but they also do deals with other companies to actually utilize their content in some format, right? Mm-hmm. So they're selling subscriptions to the paper, but they're also licensing their content to be used in other places. And that, to me, is where the core of this lawsuit comes from, which is how is that New York Times content being used? And the New York Times obtaining the value that they believe, right, is for the content that they're actually produced, right? So that's kind of the core and the background. The New York Times was negotiating with OpenAI, right, for some sort of license agreement, but those, I'll call it, that broke down, and that's where the lawsuit actually, I'll call it, came to fruition because of the breakdown in the negotiations themselves in terms of the utilization of that content.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. That's a really great background. And I'm curious what exactly the claims are that the New York Times is making against OpenAI, and how OpenAI and Microsoft has responded to the allegations, because Microsoft is also a player here, which I think
I mean, it's an excellent point. If you think about where the money is, right?
Yeah.
No, Microsoft's got the money, and you always sue the person that's got the deepest pockets, and so therefore that's where Microsoft's involved in this. And it's, you know, maybe we'll talk about this now, right? I mean, obviously, why is the New York Times suing OpenAI, and why are they suing Microsoft? What they see is Microsoft and OpenAI profiting what they believe to be unfairly off of the New York Times content, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at it and say, well, how can you say they're profiting unfairly? OpenAI is only, you know, maybe they're doing $1 billion worth of business today, right? You know, they're not making a profit. I guarantee you they're not making a profit right now. Yeah. But if you look at the valuation of Microsoft, and what I mean by the valuation is take the number of shares of stock that they have out in the marketplace and the stock price, multiply those together, that becomes their valuation, right? How much are they actually worth? Microsoft's valuation since the inception of OpenAI has gone up $1 trillion. Okay. So now that means that's not necessarily profits that are coming into the company, but the shareholders of Microsoft overall, their wealth has increased by $1 trillion. And the New York Times is saying, hey, where's mine? Right.
Yeah.
Where's my part of that? So, you know, we'll get into that. But the foundation of the suit itself, there's really four things that are alleged, let's call it, in the suit, that Microsoft is saying OpenAI is profiting unfairly. The first one is that they're saying that Microsoft is copying and using the content of the New York Times. I'm sorry. Yeah, Microsoft and OpenAI are copying the content of the New York Times and using that content in ChatGPT to train those large language models. They're doing it unfairly, right? So they're effectively, I'll call it fair use, right? They're saying, hey, I put this out there. Other companies licensed for this material. You did not license for this material. You just copied it. Therefore, I'll call it infringement on copying the material. The second piece then is, I'm going to refer to it as plagiarism, right? So it's a little bit different than copying, but it's plagiarism. And effectively what the New York Times is alleging is to say, when you go into ChatGPT and you ask ChatGPT a question and it produces an answer, it will produce an answer in certain cases that is verbatim, almost exactly the content that was in the New York Times. So in other words, it's saying, I'm producing an answer to the question. I've plagiarized that. I haven't given you the credit, right, that you were the author of that. And so therefore, I'm going to sue you for plagiarism. The third part of the lawsuit goes into, I'm going to call it unfair competitive practices. So what the New York Times is alleging is ChatGPT, with the content that's being created, when you go into a Bing search today, right? You go into a Bing search today, and in that Bing search, it's connected to ChatGPT. And what you're seeing today, right, when you do a Bing search, is not just an inventory of websites anymore, right? What you're seeing is a little blip at the top of that Bing search that gives you information about whatever is that search is that you did, right? A lot of that information could be attributed to the New York Times, right? Now you're looking at that piece of information and you're saying, you know what? I got enough now to know what it is that I wanted to know about this search. I don't need to click on that link to take me to the New York Times because I've learned enough about what I need, right? Mm-hmm. Well, when you don't click to go to that link to the New York Times, the New York Times is now not making the hit that it expected to hit. It's not generating the revenue off of the advertising that it has on that site. And so therefore the traffic's gone down. So effectively, they're saying you're using my content unfairly against me to reduce the amount of traffic that's actually coming to my site, right? So that's the third part of the suit. And then the fourth part of the suit is, and it's a little bit novel and it's unique, but essentially it's saying that ChatGPT or OpenAI is damaging the New York Times reputation based upon the generation of hallucinations, right? And we've talked about these hallucinations previously on the show like this, right? But, you know, OpenAI or ChatGPT has the potential and often does create content that it would reference to say, this is a New York Times article and this New York Times article said this when the New York Times article never existed, right? To the extent that it creates information and attributes it to the New York Times, right? That really wasn't the New York Times. Then the New York Times ultimately is saying, we didn't produce this. You attributed it to me. You've damaged my reputation because you produced high, you know, inferior work. Therefore it's, you know, you're liable for that. Right. So those are kind of the, you know, the big charges within the lawsuit itself. And then we've talked a little bit about, you know, the damages. You know, the New York Times didn't specify in the lawsuit exactly how much it wanted, but it did say that, I'll call it, it seeks to hold them responsible for billions of dollars of damages, right? So, you know, that's pretty substantial. And they went as far to say that they believe that ChatGPT-4 should be, you know, out of existence and that it should just be stopped completely. Right. Yeah. So that's kind of what they asked for. So pretty dramatic stuff there, right? In terms of billions of dollars and stopping it altogether.
Yeah. Billions of dollars and very thorough claims. It almost feels like a culmination of every, you know, issue that we've talked about in the AI space.
Which makes it fun. I love to say I really loved a good lawsuit because you learn so much from a good lawsuit. And this obviously is one of the ones that's out there that we're tracking very closely.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, to your point, we've talked a lot about sort of the lack of trust in the market, the instability in the market when it comes to AI. It really is in its infancy. And with that comes a lot of issues and stickiness. And I'm curious if you could walk us through some other legal issues that we've seen in the AI space outside of the OpenAI New York Times lawsuit.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that are going on, right? I mean, one, you know, OpenAI is doing these deals today with content already, right? They've got to deal with the Associated Press. They've got to deal with Axel Springer, who publishes things like Business Insider and Politico. And, you know, these deals are not inexpensive, right? They're making $10 million, you know, as an example, $10 million a year is one of the reported things. So OpenAI is paying for this content, right? Mm-hmm. It's not something that they're saying, oh, we shouldn't be paying for the content itself. But there's a lot of lawsuits out there by authors, nonfiction authors, authors guilds. Everybody recognizes, right, the value of their content going into these LLMs. And OpenAI recognizes the value of the content. When you think about it, right? I was thinking about this podcast this morning and I was trying to come up with a good analogy, right? I mean, OpenAI can't evolve itself into the future without high quality recent content. Right. And the analogy that I wanted to give, and Kylie, I know I'm a lot older than you, so I'm going to use the reference of the encyclopedias that probably sit on your grandmother's shelf, right, on her bookcase. Right.
Yeah.
And you were probably doing, you know, when you were in high school, you probably had to do reports and you had to go do research. Right. Yeah. My guess is you probably didn't go to grandma's bookshelf and pull off an encyclopedia in order to be able to figure out what was going on. right?
Yeah.
So these large language models, right, to the extent that the content providers don't license their content or don't sell their content to the LLMs, right, then the LLMs can't be fresh. Mm-hmm. And if they can't be fresh, they're going to end up like those encyclopedias that are sitting on your grandma's bookshelf, right? And nobody's going to actually use them for that content. So, yeah. So they need each other, right? From yeah. that aspect. And then, you know, the other analogy would be they can't afford to put those content providers out of business. Mm-hmm. Because that would be like, I need you. It's almost like the, you know, it's almost like the fishermen that are going out into the ocean and doing the fishing. They can't fish the ocean dry because if they knock out all of their content providers, they're no longer going to have new content to go into the tool itself. So they need each other, right? So these lawsuits right now are kind of sorting out where does the value ultimately go for the people that are producing the content, because they have to obtain value in order to be able to remain relevant. And the LLMs need them to be relevant in order to be able to drive their product, right? So that's what makes this lawsuit so interesting, is they can't destroy each other, right? They can't knock each other out of business. So this is almost like a lawsuit between business partners that ultimately need each other.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it almost feels like a lawsuit between like friends or like family members of like, there's just that innate closeness and they need each other.
They need to have each other. Exactly.
Yeah. That's really interesting. And so I'm curious what exactly makes the OpenAI and New York Times lawsuit different enough that that's the one that we're discussing today.
Yeah, I think a few things. Number one, the New York Times, you know, as an entity, mm-hmm. has deep pockets. Okay, they've got a lot of money, right? They've been around for a long time. They're well established, and they've got a history of let's call it carrying the journalistic banner on mm-hmm. major journalistic issues. Right.
Yeah.
And so kind of the bellwether of we're willing to go to the Supreme Court on this thing, and we're willing to fight for the, you know, fight for the rights of the journalist. Right. So they've got that, let's call it that altruistic, attitude of we're going to do what's right. It's not about the money. It's about the money. But they're going to say this is, we're going to do what's right. The other thing that they've got is, well, let's talk about the case itself, right? They've got a huge amount of very explicit evidence, right? On the lawsuit itself, there was a 127-page attachment to the lawsuit, which went through, I'll call it hundreds of examples of exactly where ChatGPT had produced as output the exact same language or very close to the exact same language as the New York Times. So, you know, if you're going into a courtroom and you're showing, you know, the I'll call it the jury, right? The peers like you and me, if we're going into a courtroom and you're mm-hmm. showing me 100 documents where the output looks exactly the same, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good, case to say, oh, by the way, you know, that was plagiarism.
Yeah.
And the New York Times does this for a living, right? They sue people for a living. They've got a lot of copyright lawyers. They know what they're doing in this space, right? This is, you know, OpenAI is dipping its toe in the water. They're getting sued for the first time on this. They're not going to, you know, they're going to battle with, they've got good lawyers, but they haven't fought this fight as many times as what the New York Times has, right? So to me, that makes this thing very, very unique. Now, the ChatGPT is going to, at least the prediction is that they're going to use something that I'm going to call it, I think it's referred to as the fair use defense, right? And the fair use defense goes something like this. The content of the New York Times or the content of any newspaper, the thought process is that content is being produced so you can use that content in some form. Right. Mm-hmm. And let me give you an example. Right. If the New York Times produces a recipe on baking a cake and you use that recipe to bake a cake, right? You didn't expect the New York Times to come out and claim that they own part of that cake or that you should pay them for that cake because you derived value from the content that was produced by the New York Times, right?
Yeah.
So what OpenAI is saying is we're using the content from the New York Times in a novel way to produce a product, right, that is not necessarily copyright infringement, right? So we're using it to bake this cake called ChatGPT. So therefore, you can't sue us for that because we're not using it in direct competition for you. And that's what they're going to argue there, right? So it's kind of the copyright argument against the fair use argument. And that's where ultimately this thing will, you know, if it goes to court, that's what companies are going to have to decide, or the jurors are going to have to decide. Is this copyright or is this fair use?
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. What a fun time to be an IP lawyer, working in copyright and really diving into that stuff.
That's what it comes down to in this case.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so obviously we've talked about a lot of issues and we've alluded to the fact that these are not new issues by any means in the market. It's more so a culmination of them all. So I am curious if you see any resolutions to these issues, in the generative AI industry, and if there is a pathway towards working together, because it is so crucial that these entities work together.
Yeah. So, you know, in terms of the legal space, I've learned, at least looking at all these lawsuits and trying to follow these lawsuits, it's risky to kind of predict what the future is going to be.
Yeah.
You know, one avenue of I'll call it, that is possible. We kind of kicked off the show with litigation, legislation, and acceleration, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things that could resolve this problem is some form of legislation. To the extent that the government passes a law or the copyright office comes out with guidelines on copyright, you know, in that format, whatever those laws are going to give leverage to one side or the other to see I was right. And that will drive resolution pretty quickly. Now, do I see that happening within the next year? Potentially, there'll be drafts, et cetera, that may increase the leverage. I think the more likely solution, though, is that they'll come quickly to some sort of a settlement, and we won't get to see this thing play out in the courts. You know, I'll call it speed to resolution is valuable to both sides in this case. The New York Times needs, you know, they can sell that content. ChatGPT needs the New York Times driving to settlement very, very quickly. It's not going to benefit either side to have a really long, protracted debate on this. So I view this more as a method to generate leverage than anything else. So I think this is ultimately how it's going to be resolved.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And then, of course, we always want to tie everything back to the procurement professionals that are listening to this episode. And obviously, this is just an interesting topic. So I hope that our listeners have just found it interesting to dive deep on. But what are the key takeaways for them? And what are sort of your major insights that you've gleaned from this situation as we look at procurement professionals and what they need to do to be successful at their job?
Yeah, so let's go into three things, right? I think thing number one, right, is recognize that all of these LLMs are created from some form of generated content itself, right? Mm-hmm. And there will always be threats from the LLMs that were curated based upon content that was not paid for, right? You know, that was not copyrighted, right? Mm-hmm. There will always be the threat of copyright infringement or lawsuits associated with those LLMs. And as a result of that, right, companies that are producing these LLMs that may not be as well established as OpenAI, right, they may go out of existence, right? And so when you're thinking about your use of an LLM, the viability of that supplier and mm-hmm. how they curated that LLM becomes a really important part of your vetting of the supplier and vetting of that LLM, right? The other thing it says is recognizing that there are risks in those suppliers, right? With that mind, then when you're constructing your technical applications, you're going to want to make sure that you can plug and play multiple LLMs into a particular application. So think about it like a, think about it as if you are a manufacturer, right? And you're making vacuum cleaners and you source your hoses from a supplier, right? What you don't want to tie yourself to is a single supplier to produce those hoses. Because if that supplier goes out of business, you go out of business, right? Yeah. So you want to be able to say, okay, I'm going to get my hoses, but I'm going to get it maybe from two different suppliers. That way, if one goes out of business, I'm okay. Same thing with these LLMs. When you build your applications, you've got to be able to build them in such a fashion that I might be able to access multiple LLMs in order to be able to make them work. So from a sourcing perspective, when you're sourcing an LLM, you want to be able to say, yeah, I may have a primary, but I better have a secondary that goes along with it. So I'm not necessarily picking one, I'm picking multiple, right? So that's kind of number one. Yeah. The second thing is you've got to be thinking through, I'll call it, recognizing that these LLMs that are being generated today are largely based upon materials that they didn't have to pay for to create the LLMs, right? Going forward in the future, there's going to be a cost of acquisition of the training materials in order to be able to build the LLMs. Mm-hmm. That cost is going to ultimately be passed through to the consumer in some fashion, right? Mm-hmm. So as you're doing your deals today for those LLMs and whoever you're buying from, you're going to want to be able to think about what are the protections that you're going to put into your deal so that as you go through every year, you're not going to necessarily get, you know, dinged for major content fees for building the LLMs. It's almost like your cable company, right? You know, every year you're getting smacked by your cable company because you got to pay more. Why are you paying more? Because the carriage cost or the cost associated with the content providers to the cable companies is going up. And so they're passing that on to you. Same thing's going to happen in the LLMs, right? So when you're doing your deals, you're going to want to protect yourself on those LLMs. And then the last thing, I guess the last lesson to learn is to think about the content that's being produced by your own enterprise, right? And are you getting the fair value of that content? Is that content being consumed by these LLMs? Is it being produced? And is that to your advantage? Or is that to your disadvantage? It could absolutely be to your advantage that your content's getting into those LLMs. They're using that content. And if they're actually referencing you as the generation of content, that might be really good advertising, right? Yeah. So what is your strategy as an enterprise on your content to go into those LLMs and to be thinking about that, right? So to me, those are the three things I guess I take away for organizations, right? Understand your risks, understand how you're going to protect yourself, right, for increased cost as a result of that, and then be thinking about your own content and how you're generating that, and are you getting fair value out of that content?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's great. And this was a super interesting conversation. I hope that our listeners gleaned as much insight as I did from all of this. And we'll definitely, you know, stay abreast of the lawsuit. And if there are any updates, make sure to mention them in upcoming episodes. But yeah, thank you so much for this conversation, John. It was super insightful.
Yeah, Kylie, and if you want, maybe we could put a link on the page to the lawsuit itself.
Yeah. So we'll definitely have that. So transparently for our listeners, we're a couple of days out from when we recorded the episode that you just listened to, and there's been some really interesting developments. So we wanted to go ahead and take some time to cover those developments and include them in this episode so that we're giving our listeners a full picture of what's going on and all the information that is out there prior to this episode being published. So John, I know we've had some interesting news as far as OpenAI's response to the New York Times lawsuit against them. So could you talk a little bit about how they've responded either legally or just in like sort of the public internet forum?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's interesting, Kylie, because right before we taped this, I said, okay, I'm going to go out and look at the the docket to see if there's been any legal proceedings that OpenAI has put out there. And clearly there's a lot of activity going on, but nothing that has been legally published on this yet by OpenAI. But what OpenAI did is they did almost like the town crier posted kind of, here's our response to what the New York Times is saying. And effectively they said, they said four things. They said, number one, we collaborate with news organizations. We're not against the news organizations. And essentially what they did is they went down through and said, hey, our tool is a great aid to news organizations to do background research and to find different articles. And they're going to be a lot more efficient if they use us. And they did say that they are incorporating into the ChatGPT tool, I'll call it the footnoting, right, or attribution to articles that they would attribute to those various news articles or news agencies like the Associated Press, Axel Springer that we talked to before. They've incorporated that attribution into their responses. So that's kind of number one. The second thing that they said is what we talked about before, that they're using the fair use defense. Mm-hmm. And effectively saying, right, hey, this is fair use stuff, and we believe it should be used to be able to build our tool. But then they also said, oh, by the way, you can get out of that if you want by simply, you know, making that a part of, I'll call it your website, or going to ChatGPT and saying, we don't want you to scrape our stuff. And they said they will accept it. Right. So to me, that feels like a pretty strong argument right there on behalf of OpenAI that says, hey, you know, we're not going to use it if you don't want us to use it. The third thing that they got into was this thing called regurgitation. And you remember when we talked about regurgitation, it was essentially republishing almost word for word exactly what the New York Times said, and only making it look like it had come from ChatGPT. Effectively, what OpenAI said there was, yeah, you know what? We know we have a problem and we're working on trying to fix that particular problem, right? So they acknowledge that that's an issue with their product. And then the last thing they did is they essentially wanted to say, we're going to take our turn of throwing the New York Times under the bus here. And they're going to say, they're not telling the full story. And in particular, when they talked about that regurgitation error, they said that the New York Times included an inside of its lawsuit a number of places and a number of situations where ChatGPT effectively regurgitated or violated what New York Times would say was a copyright law. What OpenAI is saying is, in order to be able to generate those results, the New York Times had to do a lot of gymnastics with prompting in order to be able to get those things to come out in that particular fashion. Right. So essentially, they're saying you rigged it in order to be able to get those results. And it was almost like we were having this conversation earlier. It's almost like me going, Kylie, repeat after me. And then as soon as you repeat after me, I say, OK, I'm going to sue you because you just copied my words. Right. Essentially, that's what OpenAI is saying. So that's kind of their response to the New York Times. I think we're going to see a lot of these points come back in you know, in the form of a charging the judge to, hey, you should just dismiss this lawsuit with prejudice. That's typically the way that they the way these go is they say, hey, judge, you know, just make this thing go away. I would expect we'll probably see this in a in that legal format probably within the next 30 days.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually, and maybe this is too speculative for what we're trying to do here, but why do you think they went ahead and published something like this?
Well, brand damage for one, right? They want to get ahead of the story, right? That goes out there and says, hey, you just, you know, you just said all these bad things about me. We want to be able to show the world that, you know, hey, we are altruistic. We're doing the right things for people. And they're pointing out the things that they're trying to do that, you know, are right. We're helping the news organizations. We know we have a problem with the regurgitation. If you don't want our stuff being copied, then you can say, don't copy it, right? So effectively, they're trying to get that out into the court of public opinion that we're not a bad company.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And that makes complete sense. And this was definitely an interesting development. So I hope that for our listeners, this really helped sort of supplement everything that we talked about in the main episode topic. And yeah, it'll be very interesting once their actual legal proceedings and legal arguments are published, because I agree. Yeah. I think they're going to end up looking a lot like this.
Well, I've told you before, I love a good lawsuit. So, you know, yeah. I hope the judge doesn't dismiss.
Yes, yes, for sure. All right. Well, thank you, John, so much for that update.
Sourcing Enterprise AI is co-hosted by John Belden and Kylie Chisholm and produced by Mike Brown. The podcast is brought to you by UpperEdge, a leading IT sourcing, negotiation, and project execution advisory firm. Make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss a new episode. For more innovative IT sourcing and risk mitigation insights, subscribe to the UpperEdge newsletter and follow UpperEdge on social media at the links in our episode description. Thank you for listening.